From executive producer Isaac Saul, this is Tangle.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Tangle Podcast, a place we get views from across the political spectrum, some independent thinking, and a little bit of my take. I'm your host, Isaac Saul, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about a global wealth tax. Yep, that is something that is being proposed by some very important people right now. We're going to break down exactly what happened, what the proposal is, what we know about it, and of course, some arguments from the right and the left. So to break down this story, we're going to bring in our trusty podcast producer and editor, and now kind of my co-host here, John Law, and I'll be back with my take and your questions answered.
Thank you, Isaac, and welcome, everybody. Here are today's quick hits. First up, Israel began its operation in Gaza's southern city of Rafah yesterday, where Hamas's army battalions are stationed and more than 1 million Gazans are sheltering from the war. Israel struck less than 24 hours after warning 100,000 residents to evacuate. Hamas had accepted a ceasefire proposal drafted by Qatar and Egypt earlier on Monday, but Israeli officials said it did not meet their conditions. Number two, Columbia University announced that it was canceling its main commencement ceremony due to campus safety concerns amid weeks of student protests over the war in Gaza. Number three, a U.S. soldier who was stationed in South Korea was arrested in Russia over the weekend on charges of theft. The soldier traveled to Russia on his own between deployments, U.S. officials said. Number four, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont, announced he would run for a fourth term. Sanders, 82, is the second oldest senator behind Chuck Grassley, the Republican from Iowa. Number five, after finding he violated his gag order for a 10th time in his trial in Manhattan, Judge Juan Merchant threatened Trump with jail time yesterday.
Tax avoidance will cost the world a total of $5 trillion over the next decade. That's the conclusion of a new report by the Tax Justice Network, a campaign group calling for global tax reform. According to its research, the use of tax havens by multinationals and wealthy individuals deprive countries of $472 billion in tax revenue every year. Now, to put that into perspective, that is more than the entire world spends on public health annually.
G20 ministers' proposal of a wealth tax on billionaires is gaining traction. Well, they argue that this would help fight poverty, inequality, and climate change.
Late last month, G20 ministers from Brazil, Germany, Spain, and South Africa signed a motion and published an opinion piece in The Guardian calling for a global tax of 2% on the world's 3,000 billionaires. The proposal is to raise roughly 250 billion euro, or around $270 billion, a year to fight against global poverty, and has also been backed by the head of the International Monetary Fund. The ministers argued the tax would reduce inequality and help the global economy rebound from the shock of the pandemic. It is time that the international community gets serious about tackling inequality and financing global public goods, they wrote. One of the key instruments that governments have for promoting equality is tax policy. Not only does it have the potential to increase the fiscal space governments have to invest in social protection, education, and climate protection, designed in a progressive way, it also ensures that everyone in society contributes to the common good in line with their ability to pay. A fair share contribution enhances social welfare. The G20 ministers behind the push say they will attempt to build international consensus on the wealth tax and push for a joint declaration at a meeting of the G20 finance ministers and central bankers in July. Brazil, which currently chairs the G20, put the proposal on the agenda for a meeting of finance ministers earlier this year. Each year, the group selects a different member country to serve as president and set an agenda. Research from the non-governmental policy organization Oxfam has shown that billionaires became 34% wealthier by the end of 2023 than they were in 2020, largely due to a boom in asset values. The collective gain was about $3.3 trillion. In the U.S., it is not clear if government officials or the Biden administration would back a global wealth tax, though Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has already endorsed a global minimum tax on corporations. The plan already faces stiff opposition from critics who say that any kind of global minimum tax would amount to a form of taxation without representation. According to polling from Gallup, Democrats are roughly three times more likely than Republicans to favor heavy taxes on the rich, although all Americans have expressed greater support for higher taxes on the wealthy in the past two decades. Today, we're going to explore some arguments about a global wealth tax from the right and the left, and then Isaac's take.
We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
First up, we're going to start with what the right is saying. The right opposes any kind of wealth tax, suggesting it amounts to a power grab by left-wing governments. Some say more taxes on the wealthy won't have the effect progressives intend. Others say history shows wealth taxes are disastrous for economies. The Wall Street Journal editorial board said, "Watch out for a global wealth tax. In our new socialist age, the demand to tax and redistribute income is insatiable. The latest brainstorm arrives in a proposal by four countries in the G20 group of nations to impose a 2% wealth tax on the world's billionaires," the board wrote. As you might expect, this would principally be a tax raid on Americans, who are the most numerous billionaires. It would also be taxation without representation, since it would be a body of global elites attempting to impose a tax without having passed Congress. The wealth tax proposal underscores the growing danger from the G20, which is increasingly at odds with U.S. interests. Founded in 1999 after the Asian debt crisis, the G20 is becoming a vehicle for the world's left-wing governments to gang up on the U.S., the board said. The Biden administration is run by liberal internationalists who are happy to cede more power to multilateral institutions. For this crowd, taxing American billionaires to redistribute income around the world is all too imaginable. For the Hoover Institute, Richard A. Epstein argued, "Wealth tax proposals are a poor idea." 2 years ago, at the height of the pandemic, billionaires accumulated capital at near record rates. Now potential gains from a wealth tax have fallen because of the enormous declines in wealth, Epstein wrote. In sum, the American billionaires lost $660 billion this past year, about one-third of the $2 trillion in losses worldwide. Nothing guarantees that they will recover those losses anytime soon, if ever. Considering a hypothetical 3% wealth tax rate, close to $20 billion in domestic wealth tax revenue disappeared in 2022. This number would be far higher if the wealth tax also reached foreigners. The effort to impose a wealth tax runs afoul of the fundamental principles of taxation put in place throughout the course of the income tax era, which now spans more than 100 years, Epstein said. Worse, the tax will damage the economy. Today's ableist entrepreneurs will be forced to devote their time to defending their fortunes against a predation by the one or more states that lay claim to their wealth. An overall decline in social wealth will likely lead to a reduction of investment and wages, and consequently, to a lower standard of living and a loss of tax revenues from other sources. In Barron's, Scott Hodge called the wealth tax the worst form of sin tax. "President Joe Biden wants a wealth tax, but it's not because he has anything against rich people," he says, Hodge wrote. Biden's words and actions reflect progressives' competing motivations when it comes to taxing the rich. To some, a wealth tax is all about raising revenue. To others, it is an advanced form of sin tax aimed at punishing wealth and addressing inequality. But history shows taxes aimed at punishing behavior and raising revenues often fail at both while hurting the poor in the process. Progressives often look to Europe for inspiration on tax policy. Ironically, many European countries, including France, have abandoned their wealth taxes because of the unintended consequences, Hodge said. Much like the estate tax, the notion that a wealth tax addresses inequality is an illusion. In reality, these taxes cause a transfer of wealth among the rich while the government skims a little bit off the top from the transaction. All right, that is it for what the right is saying, which brings us to what the left is saying. The left generally supports a global wealth tax, framing it as a necessary move amid rising inequality. Some say a wealth tax would be toothless without international cooperation. Others say the tax would be a step in the right direction toward addressing inequality, but wouldn't solve the issue outright. In the New York Times, Gabriel Zucman wrote, "It's time to tax the billionaires. One obstacle to taxing the very rich is the risk that they may move to lower tax countries. In Europe, some billionaires who built their fortune in France, Sweden, or Germany have established residency in Switzerland, where they pay a fraction of what they would in their own home country," Zucman said. "There is a way to make tax dodging less attractive, a global minimum tax. So no matter where a company parks its profits, it still has to pay at least a baseline amount of tax. The proposal stays firmly in the realm of income taxation. Billionaires who already pay the baseline amount of income tax would have no extra tax to pay. The goal is that only those who dial down their income to dodge the income tax would be affected," Zucman wrote. "The idea that billionaires should pay a minimum amount of income tax is not a radical idea. What is radical is continuing to allow the wealthiest people in the world to pay a small percentage in income tax than nearly everybody else does." In The Guardian, Larry Elliott argued, "The global wealth tax plan makes perfect sense. U.S. billionaires make their money in ways that are often taxed at lower rates than the ordinary wage income of American workers. Overwhelmingly, their wealth comes from the rising value of their assets, and they use tax loopholes and legal accounting moves to minimize the tax they pay," Elliott said. "The number of billionaires almost tripled in the 2010s and has continued to rise over the past 4 years, even though people on much more modest incomes have also seen the value of their homes and pension plans increase. Those with high levels of wealth, to begin with, were the biggest gainers. Even a 2% wealth tax would leave the rich much better off than they were a decade ago." One objection to wealth taxes is that they stifle innovation and growth. This argument would be more compelling if there was evidence that the massive increase in wealth of the super rich over the past decade had financed an investment boom. In fact, investment has been historically weak, Elliott wrote. "Countries that have operated wealth tax in the past have found that they raise relatively small amounts of revenue, in part because the very rich can shift their money to tax havens. For the plan to work, there would need to be international cooperation to prevent capital flight." In Jacobin, David Moskrop said, "The wealthy's opposition to the wealth taxes is a good reason to pursue them further. Wealth taxes are not a panacea. They won't dismantle the structure that produces billionaires and leaves workers struggling to feed themselves," Moskrop wrote. "A 2% tax would be a pittance. Of course, in a remotely just world, this small number would be irrelevant because there would be no need of the tax in the first place. That's because there would be no category of billionaire, no class of wealth hoarder who enjoyed the capital and the power that shape affairs in their interests while the many struggle to make ends meet. Despite the limits of a global wealth tax, there are virtues that make the undertaking worthwhile. For one, extracting hundreds of billions of dollars means there's more money for states to spend fighting climate change, funding social programs, building infrastructure, and so forth. More money for collective undertakings of social import is more money for good and necessary causes," Moskrop added. "Successfully implementing a billionaire tax would indicate a modest but notable power shift, an assertion that the many, and the states that are ostensibly meant to represent them, do indeed retain some control over the powerful few." Now we'll send it back to Isaac for his take.
All right, that is it for what the right and the left are saying, which brings us to my take. So I actually tried a little experiment today with the newsletter. I decided to write down a few thoughts about this issue before I read a single opinion piece about it. And then I wrote the second half of my take after I read the various views that were out there. So let's start with how I was feeling before reading any of the other arguments about this proposal. First, I'm fine with the premise in pure theory. I can certainly concede that billionaires have benefited greatly from the last few years of economic change and that nobody needs $1 billion, especially when so many people globally are starving and struggling. We're basically asking these people to give up a little, relatively, to do a lot of good. In principle, that doesn't offend my limited government sensibilities. At the same time, though, I just don't know how something like this would work. I'm not at all a fan of global economic rule that all or most countries are bound to. There are certain areas where global rules make sense, like international rules of war. But even in those very sensible spaces, there is no authority to enforce those rules when countries violate them. I don't see how this would be any different. Even if we accept the idea that taxing the world's billionaires at a flat rate of 2% is a good policy prescription, my guess is that many billionaires would avoid paying it by simply moving themselves or their wealth to countries not participating in that tax plan. Who is going to actually go and collect this money? Plus, how do we decide who doles out the money? What government projects is this going to fund, and who gets to determine where it goes? In the United States, we vote for representatives who get to decide how to use our tax dollars. How can this system coexist with a tax imposed by an international body that no one has voted for? And do the billionaires get a vote on what happens to their money? Funnily enough, when I was at the TED conference in Vancouver a few weeks ago, one of the few talks I actually got to see was Rory Stewart's address about poverty. Stewart is a British academic and a former member of parliament who helped oversee the United Kingdom's government programs to fight poverty. I'm sure his talk will be online soon, but the gist of his argument, which I found very compelling, is that governments are very bad at fighting poverty, and the best way to do so would just be to give impoverished people moderate-sized one-time cash payments. Stewart spoke about how he used to be a government optimist, but his on-the-ground experience with government programs and simple cash transfer programs to fight poverty convinced him that he was wrong, which is just to say that I don't think giving these governments an extra $250 billion to fund some bloated anti-poverty projects is actually going to help much. All right, so that is what I wrote before reading any of the opinions. After spending a few hours reading through all our research and the different arguments on this topic, I have to admit, my opinion didn't change much. I'm sorry, I thought this was going to be a little bit more exciting. On the whole, it seems like my gut reactions were very similar to the arguments under what the right is saying. Some of those writers added additional strength to my argument, like the obvious point that any global tax like this is sure to start with a small group of people, like 3,000 billionaires, but will almost certainly expand to a larger pool of rich people to tax from. That is, historically, what taxes do. They expand. The New York Times opinion piece by Gabriel Zucman was the most compelling piece I read in favor of the wealth tax, but not on the principles of the argument. Mostly, Zucman illustrated just how wealthy these billionaires are, just how low their effective tax rate can be, and just how good they are at avoiding taxes. He did a good job of assuring me I should have absolutely zero sympathy for the billionaires being taxed, and he also made one important distinction about this proposal. The 2% wealth tax applies only to billionaires who avoided paying income taxes. If, for instance, someone like Bernard Arnault, the French businessman and art collector who is worth about $210 billion, paid no income tax, then this proposal would collect roughly $4.2 billion from him. Therefore, Zucman argues, this doesn't veer into a potentially unconstitutional wealth tax, but instead constitutes a penalty for not paying income tax. Still, Zucman agrees that getting these billionaires to participate would be difficult, and he doesn't do anything to address my biggest concern, which is who gets the money and how do we decide what to do with it. His entire pitch is based on the idea that quote-unquote fixing capitalism includes a step where we give hundreds of billions of dollars to hundreds of governments across the world and trust them to solve poverty. Ironically, because this actually sounds a lot more radical, I'd find this approach a whole lot more appealing if I was assuming that it was just a direct wealth transfer, i.e., giving money directly to the global poor. In other words, I'm not worried about scraping a couple billion dollars from someone who is stratospherically wealthy and avoiding paying taxes like Arnault. I'm worried that the end result would be to inflate government coffers and not actually solve poverty. We'll be right back after this quick break. All right, that is it for my take, which brings us to your questions answered. This one is from Aaron in Columbia, Missouri. Aaron said, from student loan forgiveness to Title IX to social media coercion during COVID, and just recently the FTC eliminating non-competes and the reclassifying of independent contractors, it seems as if the Biden administration is purposefully tying itself up in courts, knowing they most likely won't win. I'm curious if you have any perspectives on this. What is their endgame? Why keep pushing student loan forgiveness, for example, knowing it's likely to be challenged and fail again? It's all so very puzzling to me. Okay, so at the risk of being too reductive, the Biden administration is issuing rules and executive actions because after a strong first 2 years of lawmaking, it can't pass any legislation. In 2023, Congress passed the fewest laws of any year in decades. That's due in part to the divided nature of the current government. Republicans have a slim majority in the House, Democrats have the White House, and an even slimmer majority in the Senate. But it's also caused by increasing partisanship. Congress has been on a general trend of passing fewer substantial laws since 1996. With the prominent recent exception of Speaker Mike Johnson, the Republican from Louisiana, navigating the passage of a foreign aid package, the Biden administration has been tied to a Congress that seems committed to working against any new bills. That's bad news for a president hoping to tout some fulfilled campaign promise going into re-election. So, I think Biden's endgame here is actually simple. Try to follow through on the things you campaigned on doing as much as possible. Because if that platform was compelling enough to get you elected, then being able to say you delivered on it or tried and the Republicans stopped you might be enough to get you reelected. Let's take the example of student aid. Yes, much of Biden's debt cancellation has already been struck down by the courts, and much more is likely to be. But a lot of it has been successful. His administration has approved $146 billion of debt relief for 4 million borrowers. Whether you approve of that or not, it's something he campaigned on doing. The same is true for new Title IX rules, reclassifying marijuana, and trying to crack down on independent contractors or regulate the gig economy. I don't think Biden's endgame with trying to accomplish these goals via federal action is to tie the court system up. I think he's just trying to claim that he's taking action so he can tell voters he's enacting the platform that won him the presidency in 2020. And if things get caught up in the courts, he can point to that as evidence of his effort. All right, that is it for your reader question today. I'm going to send it back to John for the rest of the pod, and you'll hear from me again tomorrow. Have a good one.
Thanks, Isaac. And here's your Under the Radar story for today. Are we talking too much about mental health? Researchers at the University of Oxford are beginning to warn that we are in danger of overdoing the focus on mental wellness and instead encouraging kids to identify with disorders they may not have while overinterpreting their normal emotional responses as symptoms. The research has shown unexpected results in trials of school-based mental health interventions in the United Kingdom and Australia, where students who participated in training for mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy, and dialectical behavioral therapy emerged no healthier than peers who did not participate. Their view remains a minority position among specialists in adolescent mental health, who argue the more urgent problem is lack of access to treatment. The New York Times has this story, and there's a link in today's episode description. All right, next up is our numbers section. The percentage of Americans who think the government should redistribute wealth via heavy taxes on the rich is 52%, according to a 2022 Gallup poll. The percentage of Democrats who think the government should redistribute wealth via heavy taxes on the rich is 79%. The percentage of Republicans who think the government should redistribute wealth via heavy taxes on the rich is 24%. The combined wealth of the world's 2,660 billionaires in 2021 was $13.76 trillion. The percentage of all federal income taxes paid by the top 1% of U.S. taxpayers in 2020 was 42.3%, according to the Tax Foundation. The amount of corporate profits shifted to tax havens in 2022 was $1 trillion, equivalent to 35% of all the profits booked by multinational companies outside of their headquarter country, according to the 2024 Global Tax Evasion Report. The percentage of global profits shifting attributed to U.S. multinationals is 40%. The estimated amount that a 2% global tax on billionaires would generate in revenue is 250 billion euro, or $270 million. And last but not least, our Have a Nice Day story. Responding to something that makes you angry by writing about it on a piece of paper, then shredding it up, can help with controlling anger responses, according to a research team in Japan. The study, published in Scientific Reports, is the culmination of years of previous research on the association between writing and anger reduction. We expected that our method would suppress anger to some extent, lead researcher Nobuyuki Kawai said. However, we were amazed that anger was eliminated almost entirely. Science Daily has this story, and there's a link in today's episode description. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. As always, if you'd like to support our work, you can go to readtangle.com and sign up for a membership. We'll be right back here tomorrow. For Isaac and everybody on the Tangle News team, have a great day, everybody. Peace.
Our podcast is written by me, Isaac Saul, and edited and engineered by John Wall. The script is edited by our managing editor, Ari Weitzman, Will Kadak, Bailey Saul, and Sean Brady. The logo for our podcast was designed by Magdalena Bakova, who is also our social media manager. Music for the podcast was produced by Diet 75. And if you're looking for more from Tangle, please go to readtangle.com and check out our website.